Okay, hello. This is Teresa Dietze and David Franco with our 19th group session of Practical Work on Self. Tonight we will discuss Chapter 18 in Practical Work on Self, Repairing the Past, and then move on to begin working with Walking Between Raindrops.
Good.
Has everybody said hello?
Hi, Leona.
Hello,
I'm
there.
Glad you're here.
Hey, yeah, Leona.
Hi.
Hello, Fiona. Still here.
There were a number of questions that came up regarding chief feature, and I didn't know whether we wanted to discuss that right now or go into the chapters and hold those for later. Whichever is fine for me.
Go ahead.
I have to go for about 20 minutes. I'm going to come back and join the conversation, okay?
Okay, great. So I'm not certain that the people with the questions are necessarily here, aside from Diana, who is here. Some of them were people who listen after the fact. The questions about chief feature that I fielded this week had to do with some confusion about just what part of us the chief feature might be. People were looking for something that they did not like about themselves. Well, the chapter specifically states that the chief feature might be considered the one of the best and most likable parts of oneself, and I thought you might speak to that and help to clear up any confusion about that.
Yeah, I'd like to. It's a core chapter, the chapter on chief feature. We'll hit it if we ever do decide to do a HBM together. We'll find that the HBM that remains a core feature of our discussion and of core importance.
So HBM being the Human Biological Machine, which is another book which goes into details on some of this work about working in a practical way to awaken the sleeping machine.
Right. And our task when we look at the chapter on chief weakness and when our work there, chapter 17, is to start to find our chief feature, our chief weakness. And I think that this is not a simple process. It's a process that will take a long time, and it's a worthy process. So give yourself time on it, but be vigilant if you're able to be. Be vigilant. Do know that in a sense we're stalking our chief feature. And once we find our chief feature, we truly, for our individual selves, have a worthy opponent. And it's not the easiest thing to find. So you have to find ways and means that work for you to discover what it is. And to conclude about it at an early stage is, it's not that helpful. And it also allow yourself to be in a position where not knowing it and being in the state of wonder about what it might be itself is an energy that will help us. That in itself, not knowing the wonder of it, keeps us alive in a very different way as well. So I came across something the other day that I thought might be interesting to share about it in terms of maybe how one might get a glimpse of it. We all have the characteristics of our mind starts to wander. That's a common phrase. You know, my mind was just wandering. Or let's say you're sitting there waiting to take an elevator. You punch the button, and you're the only one there, and you're just waiting, and suddenly you find your mind wandering. Without interrupting the wandering, attempt to pay attention to what that chatter is and the nature of it. What is that inner conversation you're having with yourself, in a sense? Don't interrupt it or attempt not to. And see if that gives you a little bit of a clue as to something about who you are. Because the tech, what we're interested in is awareness of ourself. Now, what is it we're attempting to become aware of? We're working with the attention from the non-phenomenal self, the essential self, and looking back at the machine. And how does the machine operate? So we're trying to get a glimpse of it, right? So that's just one technique. It's a long effort, but as I say, a worthy effort. Those are just a couple of thoughts I had on it. I don't know if that helps.
I noticed that Jenny has showed up. I'd like to welcome you, Jenny. And did you have any additional questions about Chi Feature? You had some questions about it, and I thought I'd give you an opportunity to ask if it's not completely clear at this point.
No, I think it's pretty clear. Let me think about it and see if there's something I want to formulate. But I think I'm okay.
Good.
Could I ask something?
Yeah, of course.
So, David, I got everything what you said. I like the setup, how you put it. Now, let's say in the hypothetical case that I have found probably one of my chief features, then once you saw it in yourself, what is your next attitude? What is your attitude towards it? Just observe it? That's it. So what will be my next step?
Okay. Well, one of the concepts about Chi Feature is it's probably not something that's going to go away. It's chiseled into the machine. We know, how did the machine come to be like it is today? How did it come to be as it is? We didn't have a lot to say in it, did we? We were plunked down in a particular life environment, and we got to learn from whoever was around us, and we learned those habits. We learned them, a lot of them, many of them, our survival habits, how we survive. So once you start to identify what it is, it'll, in a certain way, continue to try to show up all the time. It'll continue to try to reassert itself in very, very subtle ways. We'll be surprised to see it in the most mundane circumstances. So the attitude that one might have toward it is what I call the attitude of a worthy opponent. And you're in a match with this Chi Feature, whereas the Chi Feature will attempt to do what the machine wants to do. It wants to keep us in the sleeping state. So if we kind of begin to have a sense of that, we begin to have a sense that that's what the machine is trying to do, and the Chi Feature is, in a certain broad way of saying, the chief way that it does it, then we know that we can wrestle with it, so to speak.
Okay, and that the question, I repeat again the question. Here is my worthy opponent, hypothetically supposed, and then what do I do with it? Here, face to face with my opponent, I battle it, I observe it. That's the attitude towards that I'm asking for.
Yeah.
What way I wrestle with the thing?
If it is allowed to run on its own, it will direct you toward its own end, which is sleep, ego survival, and survival of the machine for purposes of the world. It's not going to allow the essential self to invigorate itself and to grow. So as you'll start to see how it operates and you'll start to see that it's about to operate in a certain way, and with a side glance, in a sense, you'll move aside from it, like an Aikido move, and you'll go forward in the direction of self-knowledge and self-remembering and self-awareness. So
very nice.
Does that make sense?
Yes, like with a degree of detachment, let's say.
Yeah.
Good.
But a knowledge that it will come back again.
Mm-hmm.
It will attempt its wares again, and it'll do it often and often and yet often again.
So David, Sinhog wanted to know if the chief feature is the same as anti-me, and please also let the rest of us know what anti-me is, if you know.
I don't recall the conversations about that well, but my memory of the anti-me conversations were yes.
Can you give us a context? Hello?
Hang on. That the answer is yes, that they are similar. It's a similar thing. In a certain way, it is, Robert Sinhog, it's the same thing. It is that which is working against us. So it's just maybe another word for chief weakness.
Good. Well, shall we move on then?
Yes.
Kate, can I get a little more clarification on this before we go?
Yes, of course.
Because we've had some pretty intense dialogue this past week, that I was struggling with it because I really initially believed chief feature was negative. After re-listening to the tapes and you and I talking and listening again tonight, I'm sort of in a place of thinking it's only negative if left unchecked by our essential self, but once our essential self starts working with this, somehow it's not so negative. It's meant to be positive. And I'm not sure, is it because we're paying attention to it and we're sort of struggling with the dark and the light that it becomes positive, or is it because we take it from an egoic state from, oh gosh, being perpetually nice, let's say, to a more enlightened state of not being this perpetually nice because I want people to like me, but being caring because I'm sincerely caring.
Let's not look at it like positive and negative. Let's look at it in terms of whether or not we make use of it.
Okay.
If what makes something positive is more the use to which we put it than what it is itself. So in this work, we're using the sleep of the machine and the antics of the sleeping machine to help wake ourselves up. And so what transforms any of the ego's shenanigans from a negative to a positive is our willingness to observe them with the kind of crystal clarity that allows us to use them to wake ourselves up. And then, David, what is that you talk about compassion toward the sleeping machine? You have some words for that. Adoration. You talk about adoration,
yeah,
of the machine. Could you maybe say something about that?
Yeah. And Diana, when you say negative and positive, from what point of view are you asking the question from? From the point of view of the machine, it certainly is not negative. It's what the machine wants to do. The machine is in Fat City. It's very pleased. And certainly pleased with itself. So it's only from the context of attempting to awaken ourselves and to voluntarily evolve,
mm-hmm.
attempting to invoke voluntary evolution, that suddenly we see a block.
And that's progress.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Absolutely, it's huge.
So when you polarize it into positive and negative, and if you're doing that in order to intensify the struggle, like the struggle of sorcerers, that can be useful. But if you just do it and wrap that into the self-criticism or the perfectionism, then that's not an asset because that keeps you stuck. So it really depends on whether you're using it or whether it's using you.
That's right.
Okay, now we have a comment. Oh, go ahead.
That's just another trick of the machine.
That's right. So Soma said the chronic is the response the ego has when you're very close to waking state. For example, about to blow up from frustration. I see the chief weakness as being more subtle. Like for me, it could be my self-doubt that keeps me from moving forward and stepping up. See, my self-doubt is here because she, you know, put in question marks. And there's something else, but it got abbreviated. And it's not showing up yet, so I'll read it when it shows up. In the meantime, we can move on because she's commenting something else that I'm not sure what it is yet.
Yeah, the word chronic is another, just another word for chief weakness, chief feature, anti-me, all of those. They point in the same direction.
So, are we ready to move on into this week's work after the review of the week before? If so, I believe we are. Nothing else showing up online, and I'd like to read the header of Repairing the Past. You ready for that, David?
Yeah.
Good. Repairing the Past, Chapter 18. Out of habit, ordinary man lives in one centrum only. When it is burned out, the centrum dies and becomes useless. At that point, a man can no longer work because he is already one-third dead.
I'm inspired to ask a certain question, and I'd like to ask it. And it's actually a question I'd like to ask of everyone. Last week, we discussed this chapter, Repairing the Past, and I thought we had a fair understanding of what the exercise was.
The machine ate it.
The machine ate it?
The understanding. We understand something in the class, and we go away on ourselves, on our own, and then the machine eats it, right? It's kind of like getting it caught in a copy machine or something like that.
So I was wondering, did you take time this last week to try this particular exercise? In a sense, going against type is what it is.
Say a little bit more of that for the recording in case someone doesn't have continuity.
What we discussed last week is that we discussed the fact that there are three centrums, and the three centrums are the moving centrum, the mental centrum, and the emotional centrum, and that some of us tend to be atrophied in one of those centrums or another. That being the case, that particular centrum is underworked, underused, even to the extent possibly it's become dead. Are approaching becoming dead. So by activating one of the centrums that we no longer really use, the question is, can we start to reinvigorate and become a whole person once again? So my question is, did you try the exercise? Did you try that centrum that you don't like to try, you never try, you think it's a dumb centrum, or whatever? Did you try it?
Sinhog said, yes, I've tried this week to be more physical. And
excellent.
Yeah, good. Townsend Girl said, I tried looking at the day through each, and I did notice that one part was less active than others.
Excellent. So that's like huge.
What I ended up doing was not the exercise per se, although I thought about it a lot, and I ended up I got inspired to get back into Qigong, which is helping me be more aware of energy in my body. So that felt good.
Good,
sure.
Jenny. So now if you want to, you can bring it back to the exercise. One of the recommendations for the exercise was to consider or to actually journal using the language and the expressions and focusing on what would be of interest to each of those specific centers one by one as a separate journal entry for each one. And even if you can't get yourself to actually do the journaling, which is really educational to do because you can see one of the centrums might be very easy to find language for, and the other ones you might be really working kind of hard to figure out how to communicate from that centrum, and that struggle is very educational. But even if you don't do that, even to try and say a few sentences with one of the particular centrums as the focal point and the values that are related to that centrum would be useful.
Yes, okay.
I was wondering if Townsend Girl would like to expand a little bit on her commentary.
She did say, I found that the sensing is difficult and so easily flooded. Please say a little bit more about flooded, Townsend Girl. In the meantime, for a pause, I'm trying to be more active and creative. And then Townsend Girl, so for a pause, would the creative be the sensing part or the emotional? Good question. And Townsend Girl, I'm waiting for you to tell us what you mean by easily flooded. Takes a while sometimes to type. So anybody else or anybody on the phone who had an experience with one of the different or several of the different centrums?
Guillermo here. I did the exercise, and something particular, it was like during the day, although there were not really highlights in the day per se, but I pick up a moment in my real moment, the real moment, I say, I'm going to be reviewing this event tonight. So I became very aware in the moment of what I was feeling, how I was moving, and what was happening around me, and what I was thinking. So I pick up a couple of moments in the day to become myself aware of what's going on, because I say, these events, I'm going to review them tonight. And at night, I did the review. Just
good.
Plain and simple. I did the review of what I thought. I came back to that moment with what I thought, what were my thinking, how I felt, and what was my movement, my body movement, and the people around me describing it.
Right.
I didn't pay attention to any particular centrum. I didn't try to develop any particular centrum. I just reviewed the three centrums, my feelings, my thoughts, and my movements, or the people around.
Good.
Good.
That's also something that we can do in bed when reviewing our day, is to focus on one centrum at a time and just consider our day's experience through that centrum. Okay. Townsend girl said, well, I'm supporting a friend whose father is dying. I certainly sense her pain, but I also notice I'm sensing her father as well and what's going on. I'm not quite sure how to tie that in. Oh, and then she said, but my physical sensations, being hungry, how comfortable I am, drowned. And that's kind of cut off there. I've noticed, this is Sama now, I've noticed that when my mental and emotional are overwhelmed, my physical starts shutting down. Good observation. Being physical is sometimes hard for me, something I have to push myself to do.
And so one way that somebody like that could operate is to put themselves in a position where they must be physical. They're maybe working with others and they take on the job of physically doing stuff, maintaining equipment, moving equipment, connecting the equipment.
The spiritual standby is building stone walls. Townsend girl said, I notice my emotions also flood this as my stuff comes up around my mom.
Yeah.
And Sama said, car washes. That's a great, washing the car is a great physical.
Yeah.
Especially when we bring our attention to it as fully as possible and focus on it as we do it.
Sorry, yeah, in that note that you're describing, Teresa, suppose that I want to make my emotional center work, to use it, how would you do that? How would I put myself in a situation that I, let's say,
good question,
a little less work?
I find that it's easiest. In fact, I saw one of the people today as a client who's in this course who listens later, and she was overworking her mental centrum to a pretty extreme point. And there were a lot of different kinds of indications that coming into the sensations in the area around her heart was a useful thing. And as she began to, I actually gave her a homeopathic remedy that pulled her into the heart, but as soon as we were able to get her to sense into the heart, then, in fact, she even had a really big experience around that being shut down, where it showed up as potentially as a physically threatening issue. And she went to the doctor and found out that her heart was perfectly fine, but it was all from shutting that feeling down completely and operating from the mind. So when she got into the heart, immediately her whole manner softened and she didn't feel so mental, and she began to experience the world a little bit differently. So one thing that we can do is to breathe in and out of the heart. Now, I'm not quite sure how this works with EJ's work, but when we want to increase feeling and emotion, centering our attention and our breath on the heart and on the chest can sometimes be helpful. And when I get too mental, I try to focus on making feeling-based comments. For instance, instead of when someone says something to me, instead of making an analysis or a judgment or an opinion, I try to respond with what my feelings are about it, or respond to the person's feelings who are speaking. And that's one, several different ways that I see of doing that. I'm sure there's others. So what do you do, David, when you want to take that into a more practical expression of the emotional centrum?
Okay, well, I'll answer that in a moment, but I'd like to throw that question open. So somebody said they have, let's say that person is not in touch with their emotional centrum. How do they open up their emotional centrum? how do you actually go there and start working with that centrum? What are some more suggestions? We heard a few from Teresa, but what other suggestions do you have for Guillermo directly?
I'd like to put one thing in here first before people do that. Townsy Girl said emotions or judgment, judging also drowned out sensing. As my emotions judge sensing and feeling, I do not really sense what I'm sensing. I'd like to state that when we're talking about the emotional centrum, there's some confusion here because we're not necessarily talking about negative emotion. If we go back to chapter 2 on negative emotion and the chapter that has the pond exercise in, which most of us will remember, even doing the pond exercise where we're feeling and opening ourselves to the sensations and the energy that are related to negative emotions and letting those things pass through, that can be sensing, but that exercise also opens up the capacity for positive emotion over time. Now, in this work, positive emotion, at a certain point, we're able to self-generate and to sustain positive emotion. How do we get to that point? All of these exercises help, but I think what we're talking about here, when we're talking about the feeling centrum at its highest expression, would be more voluntarized positive emotion. And there's two things that we're talking about: negative emotion, which yes can be a big distraction and push us off, and opening our capacity for positive emotion. So what I'm suggesting in our suggestions to Guillermo would be to suggest tips that will support developing the ability to sense positive emotion. Sama
okay.
said, put yourself in the service of others, hospice, caregiving, children, reading ABD, not sure what that is. Being at someone's call can bring up a lot. Also, do, create, look at art, listen to music. Those are all wonderful suggestions. That can bring up more feeling.
Yeah.
Any other suggestions for Guillermo to focus more on feeling? Go ahead.
And another possibility, I don't know you, of course, but would be when you're interacting during the day and whatever work you're doing, particularly when you're talking to another person, try to put yourself in their shoes. Sense who they are, what they're like, what they might be feeling about the situation. And another one is just to slow down. To slow down for a moment and see what it feels like to be with that person.
Nice. Very simple. Sometimes the simplest things are the best, and that is really a very central, core, simple baseline for all of it, for all the other things that we've said. Doing that will enhance all of it and forms a foundation for it. Now, apparently ABD is American Book of the Dead.
Yeah. And Townsy Girl, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the American Book of the Dead, but the comments that you're making about sensing your friend's father is one of the tools that's used in the American Book of the Dead to, as it said, read for another. And there you're working as a guide for the other and helping them through the bardos when they are in the bardos, and particularly when they are in transit from life to death, and during that period of time.
Please tell us what a bardo is for the beginners.
Yeah, a bardo, it's a term that derives from the Tibetans, and there's like bardo todol, and these are some of the terms that are used there. What it is, it's the between, it's the non-phenomenal reality that we start to move through after we slough off this particular mortal coil. When you die, you are somewhere, and you're traveling at that time through a series of events. And the American Book of the Dead, the practitioner, the reader, is helping guide the voyager travel through those stations, and those are called the bardos.
Thank you, David. Townsend Girl also said, try and reflect what emotions you're hearing from who you're talking to.
Good, nice.
Yeah. And for a pause, I try to be aware of feelings that arise when I'm speaking with others.
Good.
Thank you very much. That was a really, really nice leading. I appreciate that, everybody who comment on that. I'm very grateful.
Great. Good stuff.
Well, David, we're all looking at you.
Oh, it's deadly silent. I can see you. We have that other screen up right now, by the way. The reverse screen.
I was just worrying about that a couple minutes ago when I was picking my nose.
Yeah, well, we have another big screen up here. I can individually see each of you there. And there's one of you that I have some questions about, but
I think it's the red-faced donkey.
You can't really see everybody, can you?
No, Leone, he can't. Welcome back.
Yeah, well, I have a special hookup on the phone as well.
Townsend Girl said, we're all sensing cleaning products.
I'm laying here in the heat.
I knew that there were higher beings on this call. Thank you, Townsy Girl.
So, Leone, what did you just say?
I said I'm laying here in the heat.
Oh, yes, yeah, quite hot.
I know. We can tell.
So, would we like to any more on the on repairing the past, or would we like to move on into walking between raindrops? Would you like me to read the header?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would.
Chapter 19, Walking Between Raindrops. Posture is mother to mood. Tempo of work is mother to organic and psychic tempo. Self-initiated voluntary manifestation is mother to death with presence.
Gosh.
Did you read that last line again?
I'll read it all. Posture is mother to mood. Tempo of work is mother to organic and psychic tempo. Self-initiated voluntary manifestation is mother to death with presence.
Oh. Self-initiated.
I'm not sure I understand that last phrase.
I have a clue about it.
Okay.
When we become capable of initiating internally on our own voluntary manifestation, and voluntary manifestation is the opposite of mechanicality, that opens up the possibility of dying with presence.
Yeah, now I see it. boy Townsend girl, there's a lot of stuff about afterlife that's coming here to you tonight. So what we're doing here, this whole book, and the work with HBM that we, you know, that's another book that's important to me, is we're working with this idea of voluntary manifestation and voluntary growth, our own attempt at growing our essential self, growing our own soul, so to speak. So as we do that, there's this possibility of being present at that moment of passage. And that's part of our work. Part of our work as we go forward. We can use this same idea, walking between the raindrops of our customary motor centrum postures, gestures, and facial expressions to help us gain the will to awaken the machine. If we have studied the machine and are able to recognize our customary postures just before they are about to appear. So, what this is talking about then is that, as so many other things with the machine, we have physical postures that we just fall into, that we just do all the time. And if we do those all the time, we also might be able to sense just before we start to do them, and maybe see something a little different or experience something a little different. Even without will over the machine, we can suggest slight adjustments in the machine to avoid these habitual postures if we can convince the machine that those habitual postures make the machine look ugly. We don't want to look ugly. As Diana says, we want to, or I think it was Diana, make everybody like us. We don't want to look bad, right?
Yeehaw.
Some people, though, revel in it, I guess.
The red-faced donkeys.
It is not necessary to look like a complete other to others, to idiots, just to perform this exercise. The variance between customary postures, gestures, and expressions, these between raindrops alternatives could be so subtle that they are completely invisible to the casual observer. And then once again we hear, we must consider the possible effect upon others when making this experiment. It is unlawful to work on ourselves at the expense of others. View those postures which you have determined are customary for the machine as your enemies, into which you must not fall even momentarily. Do anything necessary, even throw the machine off balance to avoid sinking into these resting places. Jump, walk in a zigzag, dodge and twist like a football player, as if walking between raindrops. If your attention is distracted, just begin again. Habitual postures of the motor centrum can be present in the form of utterances, expressions of the facial mass, hand gestures, rolling of eyeballs heavenward. Every motor centrum habit of manifestation gives us a small warning signal in the sensing centrum when it is about to become active. Very subtle. We can easily become sensitive to these warning signals. This is not a very advanced exercise. Even a green beginner can do it fairly well. When this exercise is going well, add to it several mental and emotional postures of the machine, and thus concludes the reading of the chapter. thoughts, ideas, escapes.
Okay. So Susan N. asked a question. She wanted to know, just a second, I got a, I had a computer glitch here. Teresa David, can you explain presence and how it differs from the will of attention? And in my idea about that is that presence is being or attention, and the will of attention is about intention.
They are handmaidens, one together. If you are exercising the attention of the essential self and being in yourself with that attention, you are in your presence at that time. You are in your presence.
So Sama said presence is to be fully there or here. To be present in the moment, I invoke the presence of my presence in the present moment, not later, not in the past bit, but present moment. And then I had asked Silverdale what he thought that Gurdjieff had in mind about the emotional centrum, and he had said, by pacifying the historical personality comprised of thought, feeling, and manifestations of the non-phenomenal self can become active and manifest. He said, all emotions of the historical personality are negative, regardless of whether experienced as positive or negative.
Really?
That's because, I think, because they are regurgitations.
Teresa,
go ahead.
And Teresa, read the last sentence, if you see it there. The non-phenomenal self experiences only one feeling. Do you see that?
No, I'm having a problem with scrolling at the moment. Oh, here it is, finally. The non-phenomenal self experiences only one feeling, a pleasurable vibratory sensation which can be intentionally intensified. Then Sindhag said, go ahead.
So basically what happens is when we enter into life, at the moment of our conception, we experience three things. Division of first of all, we experience unity. When that sperm and egg join together, they're perfectly unified, and we experience ourselves as one whole being. Immediately after, we begin to experience division, multiplication, diversification. Reflected in the physical body, reflected in our thoughts, and reflected in our emotions. That enables us to develop a historical personality that deals in a world in which we are surrounded by multiplicity and diversity. And all of that together is our chief feature. We are victims of our historical personality because it's imposed upon us when we're unable to do anything consciously about it. And in that sense, we're involuntary slaves. Our whole effort in practical work on self is to attempt to become more conscious or help our historical personality become more conscious. The way we do that is developing our non-phenomenal self. So all of these exercises are intended to help our non-phenomenal self, which is light, white light, an infinite extension, experienced as a vibratory sensation, and experiences all of life as undifferentiated unity, so the diametric opposite of multiplicity and diversity. And in that state of the non-phenomenal self, there is only one feeling, not a spectrum of feelings, only one feeling. But that one feeling, a pleasurable vibratory sensation, can be intensified according to the intention of the individual cosmic unit. So that the intention is to get that non-phenomenal part of ourselves working so that we can blend it back together with our historical personality and achieve personal beingness.
Thank you. So I wanted to speak a little bit more about the the negative side of positive emotions. So the negative side of positive emotions is, for instance, attachment or sentimentality. Those can be very automatic, and they can trap us into a lot of mechanicality. So there's a lot of positive emotions that are just reactions, an accretion or buildup of preferences that the ego gathers through the experience in the personality. And these things can really limit our ability or willingness to respond to life without bias.
Could you elaborate on that, Teresa? Could you give an example?
Besides, that is a great observation, Teresa.
An example is if you have the opinion that you like a particular thing all of the time, and gosh, like I like ice cream, for instance, and then maybe you find out that you're allergic to it and it's causing problems, and then you'll suffer because you have this constant desire and you'll like it. In fact, this is a little bit off base in one way, but not in another. People decide that they like tomatoes, and then they've had a tomato that was good at some point, but then they get these tomatoes that weren't even ripened, that are sort of light pink, and they're hard, and they actually taste like cucumbers, but because the person thinks that they like tomatoes, they don't notice the sensory experience of actually eating the tomato that isn't very good, that they actually wouldn't like if they paid attention to it. So that's not really an emotion. That's why I said it was off base. But there's a lot of ways that we do the same thing at emotional level, or we become so totally attached to having a particular type of experience. Like somebody, I've seen people who really love little tchotchkes or little tiny dust collecting devices, and they're just obsessed with it, and they have hundreds and hundreds of one kind of thing, and it begins to take over the entire house, and it's they think that they like it, but it's actually this form of sentimentality that's centered around a particular emotion, but they can't really necessarily examine it or reflect on where they're moving from when they're engaged in that behavior.
In the early chapters, in chapter 2 actually, a negative emotion is defined as being our reaction to something. Something occurs and we react. And the reaction is a modification of the body and then an idea thereof. Now, for instance, joy or pleasure can be a form of that. So let's say that you're a person that is subject to the approval of others, which it's possible that some of the people on the talk are subject to that. Possibly. And someone is looking at your work or talking to you or something, and they just affirm you. They go, "This is great." At that point, you react to that comment, and you have a blush of pleasure because this person said that. And to the extent that you like that a lot, you'll want to be next to that person so they say it again. You want to feel it in that manner where you have a reaction such that they say that, you react pleasurably. You will seek that. Just the opposite, which is exactly the same process. If someone puts you down, you react and have the opposite feeling about it. Does that help a little bit?
I'm sure that helps. Some people are kind of lost here. I apparently threw people off about the tomatoes, including Sama and Sinhog. The point about that was that I think is important is that the opinion...
Tomato talks.
Pardon me?
The tomato talks.
Yeah. The opinion that we like something can get established at the level of the ego, at the level of the personality, with so much certainty that it can override our actual sensory experience of that thing in real time, in the moment. We think we like something because we had it before and we like it, but we're not present enough in the moment to notice what's actually happening. And if we were, we might not actually like it. The same thing can happen in... I was talking to somebody earlier about relationships, and the person doesn't really like the other someone that she's related to, and or relating to, and at the same time, because she thought she liked the person initially and the first impression was good, no matter how many experiences of not liking that person occur, she still has the idea that, well, maybe this can work, maybe I want it to work, even though she doesn't really like the person at all. So
right.
The same thing happens with even a food substance, was my point about the tomatoes.
One quick comment on that is that the effect of a negative emotion like that, our reactive emotional body, overrides the sensing of what's going on right in front of us. And that kind of ties in. So we're blinded by it for those few moments. On this end, T, we're about ready to do a tape change.
Yes, we need to do that here, too.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and just take a minute and do that, if it's okay with you.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay.